Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of Soul Led Living. I am here with a guest, as you guys know that I don't do it too often, only if the guest is amazing. And we have another amazing guest who is a friend of mine. I always tell her that she's my guru. I know that's like not the best term, but that, every teacher needs a teacher. So Judy is my therapist, friend. Long, deep connections. When I first met her, I, told her a little bit about myself. She's like, "Oh, I know you. I know your brother." I'm like, "Freaking those boys, man! Like my brothers got around so much, guys, that like as I move on into life, I keep meeting women that like knew my brothers, and it's like very scary when that conversation comes up." But we've kind of left it there, and Judy and I are soulmates, and I'm happy that like we don't have to bring my brother into the story anymore. So it's all good. But welcome to the show, Judy. I'm so excited to have you to have this conversation that I've been wanting to have for a while. I have talked to you guys about this conversation before, but I'm happy to bring it forward, which is the concept of rest, what it really is, what it means in our practice, and how we can bring it forward because Judy is somebody who has taught me a ton about rest, and I'm excited to share her with you. So welcome to the show, Judy.
I'm so happy to be here. I know it's been a long time of us talking, at least a year of us talking about this. So I'm really happy to be here and share what I can.
Whenever the time is right.
Right. Divine timing, always, you know.
So, Judy, tell us a little bit about your professional. You have a professional background as a therapist, but I don't really know like how you got into the concept of rest and like why you talk about that so much. Like, did you start off as a general practitioner and then kind of moved into this conversation? I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
So actually, I went to school to be a therapist. I went to the University of Miami, did all like the normal clinical work, and then I got pregnant and basically got married, got pregnant, ended up staying home for 5 to 6 years. So I was like a stay-at-home mom. And then in that process, after my daughter was born, she was like this big bright mirror that was teaching me that maybe this marriage wasn't what I would want her in. So in the process of looking to get divorced, I was like, okay, I was a stay-at-home mom. I had no money to my own name. So I wanted to find something that I could start working towards creating a business, creating something as my dream was always to be able to work and be able to be a present mother, right? Find that thing where I could do both. So I started doing all like my clinical hours because I hadn't done them because I had graduated basically after giving birth to my 1 month old. So I was like doing my finals and breastfeeding.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I went straight to just being a mom, right? Which all that experience is never wasted. It was the best life experience for what I do, right? So in that time, as I was doing my clinical work, I was making $25 an hour. You don't get paid anything as an intern. So I had deeply gone into yoga because of my own nervous system regulation. I had back issues, I had tons of trauma. So I decided to get a yoga teacher training at the same time that I was doing these clinical hours. And so when I opened up my company, the first iteration of it was Pop In Yoga. I was teaching yoga in people's homes. And I had learned meditation, I had studied all sorts of different types of practice, nervous system regulation practices, and kind of leaned into that spiritual faith. Besides doing all the like EMDR, hypnotherapy, all the clinical CBT work that I was doing. And so it was really that was the opening of me creating this world of psychology that meets spirituality, right? Because of my what I had done for myself. And so that slowly led me into always kind of using the yogic limbs when I was working in the realm of psychology, and EMDR is very much subconscious work. Hypnotherapy is very much subconscious work. As I was doing trauma work with people, I realized that you can't, when you talk, you eventually just like plateau, right? I started to learn that it was really in the deep subconscious states that people could reprogram and rewire. And so eventually, when I hit perimenopause, I had to take a real pause in how I was living my life, right? Because even though I had yoga, even though I had meditation, I was still a single mother, business owner, you know, doing all the things that entrepreneurs do and being the sole employee of my company, right? And my nervous, then, you know, I'm married and remarried, have another child, all the stresses that come with that, the pandemic. And then I went into perimenopause and just my nervous system just, I needed a real pause. And so that's what led me to really start to go deeper into a different limb of yoga, which is this like yoga nidra meditations, which, you know, the other term is non-sleep deep rest meditations. And it was really about me learning what real rest did and how to help rewire my nervous system in those states of stillness and rest, which before I didn't, after I had kids, I couldn't nap. I had lost the ability to nap once I had a child. So I didn't really know how to rest. You know, I knew what active rest looked like, but I didn't really know what real deep nervous system rest looked like. So I hope that's a long-winded answer to get
no,
to.
No, that totally makes sense. It's funny how, you know, you lose the ability to nap, to sleep well when you have the little kids. And then I feel like as the kids get older, and you're like, okay, maybe I can sleep a little bit, but then you start like hitting perimenopause and you're like, shit, now my hormones don't let me sleep. You're like, God damn it, this is a horrible, horrible, horrible joke.
Yeah.
But I would say rest is different than sleep.
Yeah.
And that is, so I'll tell you guys a little bit about what brought me to Judy. I always like have a therapist in the back of my pocket or some sort of healer that I had been working with. And when I had moved from Miami to North Carolina, I started to work with a therapist locally to really kind of see like who I was outside of Miami. And I picked somebody local to, you know, to connect like locally that way. And it did definitely support me for a while. I worked through a lot of my just family stuff that I wasn't able to see when I lived over there. I was coming off of my husband being sober and or like, you know, going through that process. And that was helpful. I took a break from her. And then these just horrible episodes were showing up specifically in business. And it was coming up as a leader. Like I basically would keep everything together, but then I would show up to these like meetings with my team and I don't know, just felt completely internally disorganized, if that makes sense. Like I would, and I just basically hit one day that I was in tears in a meeting, which is like so not me. Like I really pride myself in being a leader and just separating friendships and relationships from like the people I work with and like really showing up as that leader as I am in the business. And I remember just messaging with Sophie, who does my content, and just apologizing for like this kind of, I don't know, attack, like panic attack maybe that I had. And I remember her once talking to me about her therapist and who she works with. And I was like, I think I need to talk to that woman that you work with. And she's like, yeah. Here's her info, whatever, reach out to her. And Judy was available, thankfully. And we started to work together. And I think when I met Judy, I thought she was going to help me understand how I can fix myself to grow my business, basically, is kind of what I thought. I was like, this woman can help me like rewire my subconscious so that I can hit the success that I want to hit. Like, that's basically why I had met Judy. And I thought it was important to work with Judy because she's Miami-based, she's Hispanic like I am, grew up in the same, and I knew at that point that like that other therapist that was, sometimes I would talk about like some of the weird things that Hispanic families do with like no boundaries, and she'd be like, that is so toxic. I'm like, toxic or Cuban? I don't know. You could see it one way or the other.
In love, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, I think I'm going to have to work with somebody from my culture. Yeah. And that was like part of the move. And we definitely, you know, started working on subconscious reprogramming, which I totally believe in. That's actually what brought me into the work. I studied, my first certification was in hypnotherapy, and I really believe in that rewiring. And I think the concept is like, I actually think about rest in the concept of manifestation, because manifestation is like, okay, I want this thing. And it's funny how manifesting leads you ultimately to healing. So basically, like, what I'm saying is, like, I came to Judy and I was like, I want this thing. Like, I'm not feeling successful in work lately. I want to grow. I'm having problems with my team. Like, it was showing up in my business. I want that to be better and I want to be successful, right? So it's kind of a manifestation intention. Like, this is what I want. And that ultimately leads you to healing and usually to change your programming, to change the way you think. So I come and we start working on that. We start I don't know if you remember. I don't remember too many of it, Judy, but we can definitely share if we remember, if it sounds like it'll be helpful. And we start working on a few little pieces. And I think a part of me thought, okay, like, as I work on these pieces, I'm going to have more clarity and more direction. And the opposite happened, which I should know better. Like, I know this, you know? Yeah. But when you yourself are the, you know, client, or you're like the, you know, the little guinea pig that's going through this process, it's not fun, you know? And I thought I had reached a place that I should be able to not predict, but basically see where I was at as I was healing. And I could not see. And what happens is that when I was rewriting all this new programming, there was all this space in between. So it's so messed up that, like, when you heal yourself, a lot of the things that motivate you and made you have direction and clarity, you realize that those are survival mechanisms. And as they go away, you're just left with a bunch of blob, is what it felt like. And I was in that middle blobby place. And I was patient, you know, but I really, and not to say that I'm still in that blobby place, I would say, but I was really looking for the next direction, and I couldn't get there. And then Judy had always mentioned the concept of rest. And it's not that I definitely grew up in a house that nobody was resting. Like, my mom wouldn't rest. I remember if I ever saw her fall asleep on the couch because she was taking a nap, I made sure that nobody, like, I would make sure my brothers wouldn't go into the room, because I was just like, she must need this if she's, like, napping. And I fought to make sure that, like, nobody would bother her. But it really was, like, very rare. But I, you know, I learned as an entrepreneur that you need to invest in yourself and rest and all that. But I didn't understand the rest of the in-between, like, basically, or in manifestation, right? Like, you reprogram yourself and you think that after you reprogram, you should be able to move on to, like, the next version of yourself. But I really started to realize that actually you need to rest in that in between, in the unknown. And it wasn't just sleep or, you know, taking naps. It felt like literally to be able to rest in the unknown. Yeah. And to me, rest, you can get there when you realize that you're safe. And I felt like it was such a good sign that I was, like, letting go of these survival mechanisms in the reprogramming, like all these things that I learned to do to survive. And my little scrappy street rat self from Miami was, like, really ready to, you know, to at least start to look at it and to let some of it go. And then I had to learn to rest in being safe, because the reason I had those mechanisms was because I thought that these were the things that were keeping me safe and that I wasn't safe. Basically, I was constantly running on this program, like, that I am not safe. Like, you got to grow, you got to do this, you have to perform, you got to make sure your hair looks good, like all these things, because, like, you are not safe.
Right.
And the reprogram basically, I just at least brought that to the surface. And then I had to do, like, the hard work, which was to rest in the moment and in the safety and to rest in what you have, because you can have all these things and not be able to enjoy them and to be there because, like, you don't know how to rest in them. Yeah. And that is really, like, what I started to learn. Is that correct, Judy?
Yeah. I mean, there's no right or wrong here, right? But I think we come from a very specific community where generationally it is about survival. And so even though our parents did all these things to bring us to America so that we could have better lives, we still come with a lot of programming that was built in them, which is this survival, like, you better do your best, you better be the best, you can't stop, you have to keep making and doing. And so it already sets us up, even though we had a much more stable upbringing, let's say, we haven't had to leave our country because of some sort of, you know, political or religious injustice, we still have that iteration of that programming in our nervous system, right?
What are some like common survival like skills that you see people in your practice have?
Mostly the women that come to me are, you know, different iterations of me and you. There are these like boss bitch women that hold it all, that make the companies, that create the companies, that are head top dogs in their companies, that are also the head soccer mom, that are making the sandwiches into little hearts for their kids. They are, you know, the bedrock of the emotional love and safety of their home, and they are the bottom of the totem pole. And so a lot of that comes from like a fawning effect, right? So if you look at the nervous system and you look at survival, it's fight, flight, or fawn, which is basically like feigning death, right? And fawning in our
freeze, I guess, too.
Right, freeze or fawn, and fawn usually shows up as like codependency, right? Which is like making sure everyone is okay, and then we'll be okay.
Okay.
Making sure we rescue everyone, that everyone else is happy, and if everyone else is happy, then we're okay.
Why are we so concerned, or like, why is our safety so connected to everybody else being okay?
I think it's a lot of it has to do with our culture, and a lot of it has to do with being women, right? We are programmed to be the caretakers, the one that takes care of everyone in the household, right? We're just supposed to do that. But I think in today's modern day, what has happened is, because we aren't really in our full feminine anymore, there's this more masculine part of us that has had to engage to be able to survive this economy, this way of life in our society. So then, yeah, we're holding on to all the caretaking stuff, but we're also holding on to the caretaking of our business, the caretaking of our clients, right? The creation of abundance and safety so that we can feed our families, and therefore the families that are working underneath us. So then it becomes this pile up, which inevitably puts us in a state of survival.
Yeah, I think it's also like the picking up after like our mothers and being like, you let this guy take advantage of you, you know, whether that's your husband or your whatever, you know, and, or you were weak and you let like dad do everything, and really realizing like somehow thinking that we'll have both. So it's like, I'm both going to keep up like what you have kept up, but I'm also going to add on this uber independence so that I am safe, so that nothing, you know, so I'm not depending on another person or another, you know, a man, God forbid. And I've also thought about how it is unfortunate to be like a millennial woman or an elder, millennial elder, or like just above that, you know, that generation, because the men that that generation are almost like catching up from such a big gap. So like we had to step in for these men to heal and catch up. And it's just, it's unfortunate that almost like they poofed, disappeared for like quite a long time. They're just starting to come back online, which is, and obviously we see the shift in our sons. The other day I was, my husband, Benny, cut down a tree that I had asked him not to cut down. He had kept telling me, he's like, I have to cut down the tree. It is not sick. I mean, it's sick. It's dangerous. He's an arborist, so I should trust him, but I don't. And he's always like, you always pick the wrong tree to love. He's like, you pick the old ones and the ones that are falling. And I'm like, but that's maybe why I love them.
Right.
And he had to cut down this tree because of like what he's building, but also like the safety of this, you know, of like the property. And I get out of my office one day and the tree is like completely on the floor. And I am just like, he didn't even let me have a ceremony. Like he didn't even let me come in, like whatever. He's like, if I would have told you, you would have wrapped yourself around that tree. And I would, and I was like, that's right. I would have. And I would have made sure that I like let my armpit hair and my leg hair grow out too, so I could like paint the picture. And so I'm like really upset, and I'm sitting on the front porch and I'm just like clearly upset. And my teenager, now that he's 13, my 13-year-old boy comes and sits next to me. He's like, "Mom, would you like to talk about it?" And which, like, he was open to holding space for my emotions if I needed to, but also if he also was like, it's okay if she like doesn't want to share or whatever, but I'm gonna sit next to her. So I really feel excited about this next level of man, and obviously has a ton to like, Oliver is only that man because of his dad, because of like the male teachers that he has at school. Of course, like they're all setting good examples for him. But I think that it was a hard time. It's been a bit difficult to like hold both, and I wonder, yeah, what the next generation brings. Like, my daughter talks about just like marrying a guy who's going to take care of her, and I just want to like crawl into the earth when she says that, but I also have to trust whatever it is that she's saying. So you're kind of thinking like that, those survival skills have like, how do you balance that out? And it not so much that like it's wrong that it's not that it's wrong that it happened, but it happened, and you're a bit more concerned with like how can we find balance from here?
It's about being able to find this, like, use the seasons of the woman's life to be able to find the path that is meant spiritually for you, if that makes sense. Right? It's not about like balance. Like, there's never balance. There's just seasons. There's seasons when some things are more imbalanced and some things aren't, and then other things are more imbalanced. You know, especially as women, we have so many different seasons, much more than men. You know, we evoke so much change physically, psychologically. There's so much more change that happens within the female body, and therein within our spirits and our soul, right? Like, there are so many versions of us that have to be created, die, and become anew in our lifespan, you know? And I feel like men have less of that. Their goal and their life purpose is pretty clear, and there's some small, like, you know, some big changes, but there's a few changes, but then it's pretty stable. I feel like what has been missing with men a lot is like rites of initiation. You know, like where you go from being a young man to being an adult man, right? That understanding of like child to manhood. Like, we have different rights. Like, we get our period. Your mother looks at you and says, "You're a woman now." I mean, my mom didn't do that, but anyways, you know, ideally, that's what you're doing, right? Then you get pregnant, you become, there's all these different rites of initiation that we have that's very clear for us. Like, oh, okay, I am now an adult. Right? As opposed to men, there used to be more rites of initiation. They don't really exist anymore. So I think it's just women being able to be in the season that they need to be in. Because to your point, we're now this modern woman that's trying to do it all at the same time. And the truth is, when I'm a good entrepreneur, I'm a shitty mom. Or I'm not a great mom, right? And then when I'm being a great mom, I'm not a great entrepreneur. Like, that's just the truth. Like, there is never any like real balance for me. It's just what I'm choosing in that day to focus my energy on and to make work. You know, I mean, the best that I can find is what I've done, which is I work part-time, right? I work in the mornings, and then in the afternoons I pick up my children and I make dinner and I do that whole, you know, motherly thing, and that feels as balanced as I can get. For me.
Well, and also you stayed home when they were younger, the first two, and then so that is something too, which I did as well. Like I was much more focused on them when they were little, and then obviously now that they're older, switching gears. So, what does it really mean to rest? Like, what do you think that is? What does that look like?
I think real rest is about neuroplasticity, believe it or not. It is about allowing the brain a place to absorb and learn and become flexible, right? So let's say, you know, neuroplasticity in itself is just the idea that our brains are plastic, that we are not hardwired as we once believed. We now can shift and grow the way our brain works. The actual anatomy can shift and change based on where we're doing repetitions of neuroplastic of connections, synaptic connections, that part of the brain will grow the more you exercise it. You want to think about it kind of like a muscle in the body, right? And so for me, rest is a way that I understand to give the brain a chance to absorb everything that has been learned in that day, right? So it's such an important thing. Besides that, sleep is this way to totally rejuvenate the entire body. Rest is much more self-directed in this neuroplastic way, which is very much about manifestation and praying into existence what you want, right? Because to me, manifestation is just praying into existence what you want, right? And I believe in a creator, I call it God, right? You may call it source, love, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, it is about maturing in your spirituality to know that you are a child of this universe. You are a child of God, right? You are a child of source. We are the spark of the divine. And so the best way that I have found to get into that place is not necessarily through specifically yoga or specifically meditation, but through this deep rest. Because you are slightly awake in a deep down, deep, deep brainwave state where you're completely connected to, I think, the spark of your divine. It is quiet. It is bliss. It is hard to find a word for what that feels like. And that, to me, that type of rest is so powerful and so simple, right? So simple.
And you found that through Yoga Nidra.
I found that through Yoga Nidra, definitely.
Can you explain what that is?
Right. So Yoga Nidra is a meditation that is not necessarily a focused meditation. It's honestly a defocused meditation. So Yoga Nidra means yogic sleep. So it is a state of sleep, but slight awareness at the same time. And there's a very specific protocol. There's lots of different like Yoga Nidra protocols, but the one that I follow specifically, you go through release, through breath, releasing any kind of tension in the body, right? We always want to do a little bit of breath work to be able to release. And then we get into the rest period through body scan. So all of this is just, all you have to do is lay down and listen. You get as comfortable as you can, as if you're going to take a nap. And then after that, a body scan, you're guided to just notice breath. And then after that, you'll either hear some, you know, visualizations, or you'll hear another like deep guidance, like maybe like some sort of messaging, right? And then you're brought up slowly back up. Now, the most important thing that I believe exists in this Yoga Nidra meditation is your intention, or your sankalpa, which is a heartfelt, deep resolve for this meditation, which is where you rewire, right? And it is a lifelong resolve, right? So if, you know, you start having like deep anxiety, because I've suffered with anxiety my whole life, right? A deep resolve of mine was to be peaceful with the flow of life, to be at peace at every moment with the flow of life, right? And so that was my resolve for a really long time. Or, you know, we were just talking before we got on here how I was getting very frustrated with Miami, with the traffic, with the noise, with the congestion. And so my sankalpa for many years was, I am free. I am free, right? And so in that, saying that at the beginning of the meditation and saying it again when you're in that deep brainwave state, you want to think about it like you're throwing a pebble or a rock into a lake, right? If the lake is very turbulent, that pebble might take a while to get down to the bottom. But when the lake is nice and still, it's going to just drop down real easy, you know? And so when it comes to manifestation, when it comes to prayer, when it comes to connecting to that true divine sense of full worthiness, right? Of full wholeness, right? Because we don't, in essence, we talk about healing a lot, but none of us is really broken. The soul can never be broken. The soul is divine and whole and complete, and it can never be hurt. because it is the spark of the divine within us, right? And so it's just that connection and being able to reiterate this heartfelt eternal truth to yourself that then in states of alpha, when you're like in alpha brainwave states, you're in that every day just moving from here to there, it's easier for the mind to quiet down because you've practiced that so much in rest that then during the day your nervous system is more at rest, which is the sensation of safety in the body.
Right. And guys, if you're interested in Clarity app, Judy has made a yoga nidra meditation for us. So you can check it out there if you're already a member, or also on Judy's website, she has a lot of great ones as well for different, like almost like little prescriptions, like for different things. So definitely check those out if you're curious. You can just, again, if you're a member, it's there, or like she sells them just like one cost per meditation. I feel that what I learned through, I always, this is how I feel about yoga in general, is like what you work on in the mat basically like comes with you to your life. So I feel like you think you can like work on all these things like as you're living, breathing, and like doing your life, but actually it's like you got to go to the mat to do it. I really believe in the mat, whether that's like through your meditation practice or your yoga practice, but like what you work on there. So it sounds like, and I didn't know that about the intention. Do you always set the same one, or do you change
It's
it? Do you spend time?
so
Because
it
sometimes it
since
gives you the intention, the
yes,
meditation.
and you'll always get someone will always give you a sample if you don't have one. What's wise about using the same one is it's like all synaptic connection wiring. You're just doing repetitions in the area that you want more. So when you use the same one, it's much more powerful, right? But if you don't have ones, and with the meditations that I sell, that I have on my website, I also have a Tsongkhapa worksheet, like a worksheet that you can work through so you can find what yours is in this season, right? And if you just want to use the one people give you, those are wonderful too. You know, they're usually like aligned with
Like a
whatever
theme.
the right with whatever theme that the yoga nidra or the NSDR is about, right? So yeah.
Yeah, and what I like learned from doing the meditations was that it was just generally safe to rest, because I would find this, I have this like really funny thing where let's say work finishes at 4 or 5 or like whatever it is, and I w could not trust 4 to 9, and that's why 4 to 9 or 5 to 9 were the worst hours for me, because it felt like now all of a sudden I have to keep thinking about all the things I need to do to like make my business work and money and take care of everything. Plus, I have to cook dinner. Plus, I have to be emotionally present for my children because, like, that's the time that they expect to see their mom after school, all that kind of stuff. And I was doing a bad job at all of it because I did not know that I can be like, oh, that busyness in your mind, Nikki, like, that's okay, but you can rest in this moment. Like, you don't, like, you're not gonna fig you're just not gonna work anything out by sitting with those thoughts. Like, it's okay to let them go. You'll see them tomorrow. Like, if they're a legitimate thing, tomorrow when you get to your office, if it's 9 or 10 or whatever time you set up aside, you will be able to work them out. But it's nothing, I don't know, no tribe is gonna come and shoot you or something in between the hours of like 4 and 9 if you don't like work out this problem. And I was struggling to rest in the places where I could rest. My sister-in-law was visiting us recently, my brother and my sister-in-law, and they took the whole week off. And my husband was like, man, talking about my sister-in-law, like, man, she can really rest. Like, she was like really letting herself rest. And he was like complimenting her. He was saying like, it's great that we got to see her rest. We're so happy. Because she has like a really stressful job and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, yeah, because she's like, and this was me being a bitch, but I was like, oh, it's because she's not an entrepreneur, or like, she makes good money and she just works her ass off. And then she knows when she has a week off, she has a week off. She's like, when I, and I, you know, and me, I'm like, I don't have, when I take time off, there is no, real time off. It's really like to switch gears. Like, now it's like, okay, vacation and pay attention to my husband, or vacation and like pay attention to my kids, instead of just being like, no, it's like maybe she set that intention that she was going to rest. And I was kind of making all these excuses as to like why she can rest and like I can't rest.
Yeah, because overfunctioning is the way that we learned to source a false sense of safety. Because when we're overfunctioning, we have a false sense of control. Oh, we're not letting anything slip through the cracks, right? I'm the one that does everything. I know I'm the one that does it the best. So, like, yeah, I have to continue to overfunction until that doesn't work anymore, right? It's not sustainable. The overfunctioning archetype that we create to because we believe it gives us a sense of safety is not sustainable, right? And whenever I've studied anything about like manifestation, right, where I've studied lots of different people that have been out there giving different manifestations plans and even followed it like in the Bible, you know how like the Bible does talk about manifestation in a way through prayer, right? And it's all like ask and it shall be given, right? And the truth is that the key to all manifestation practices is the trust to let go and receive. And
Rest in the
that's where
trust. Rest in
that's
the trust.
exactly where rest is in the trust and the allowance to receive it, right? Because that's where we're trusting source to and or God or whatever love to provide us anything we ask for, right? Absolutely anything we ask for.
Yeah, and for the high functioning woman, many of you listening, takes one to know one, guys. What happens when first, like any examples of what it looks like to not high function? I practice this a lot when I'm around my extended family because like that's where and that's a lot of what brought me to Judy. I thought I was coming for work and it was like all family related. And so I really do try to, I'm not perfect at it. It was actually becoming a problem with my husband. Like he was saying, like when I would hang out with my siblings or my parents, like I would go into this overdrive and I did not, he didn't have the word for it. He couldn't say it was high functioning. But he was saying like, you just change is kind of like what he, and I didn't understand. I was like, no, this is how I've always been this. And also very much like, there's just no other way to be. Like kind of, I felt like I'm not sure we'd have a relationship if I'm not like this. These are the things I must do to like stay in relationship with my brothers or stay in relationship with my cousins or my aunt and my uncle and my parents. So I've learned that those are great practice zones for me. It is deeply uncomfortable and what I really want to do is just avoid them. But that, you know, I've gotten to, and I think, you know, moving from Miami and moving away from them did give me that space that was very necessary and I got to avoid all of them for a long time. But that's not really what I want for my life or for my kids. So I try to go into those spaces and try to see if I can train my body to rest in those moments rather than go into high functioning. So do you know, can you give an example of like, yeah, like what is a high functioning person? Like what are they, or excuse me, over functioning? And what is it, maybe, I don't know if we had to sell somebody, because I think also what I had a problem with you and Judy for a long time was like, she doesn't get it. Like, look at everything that I have. Do you think I did that by like just chilling and resting? Like, no, I fucking grind to get here. And like, she just doesn't get it. You know, that was a lot of my ego and like what I wanted to fight. So it is very scary to tell, or, you know, again, you don't get it, Benny. I can't change the way I am with my siblings. Like they will, I will not have a relationship with any with them. Like, I don't know. They won't know what to do or whatever it is, right? It's such a strong defense that comes up when you tell an overfunctioning person to not overfunction in these like scenarios. So I hope I'm giving you guys a little bit of an example. It's basically, caring more than you're supposed to. It's very much like what Judy was saying. It's very much like thinking that if I could just create peace in this scenario, then I'm gonna be okay. My family, so I grew up, my two brothers and then two boy cousins, because my mom has a sister and we all lived in the same neighborhood. So I grew up very much with like being the only girl in a family of almost four boys, you know, five kids because we grew up so close. We had a bit of a family reunion. We see everybody spread out now, because that's what trauma will do to you. Nobody wants to be around each other anymore, but we pretend that like we do. And we have these like happen. It's just coincidentally been having these meetups in around spring break, where my older brother lives. It's a beach. It should be relaxing, and somehow everybody else is relaxing but me. Like I show up and I'm like, don't these people know that the kids need to eat?
Right.
Don't these people know that like that's too much drinking? Like, don't these people know that we need to make a reservation for that restaurant if like not no, like we're not going to be able to sit, right? Like that is what's happening to me the whole time. And in my defense, that is what is expected of me too, I would say. Like this is not all make believe. This is very much like give the busiest woman in the room the job and it'll get done.
Right.
And that is like the case. So yeah, when you tell me, let's say like not to, and I'm not saying you, Judy, but like when you tell an overfunctioning person not to do that, it's very scary because I think the idea is that like maybe things are going to fall apart, but also I'm not going to get what I want. I'm really attached to what I want, which I think brings us back to manifestation.
Right. And the truth is that overfunctioning women are always highly exhausted. And the biggest complaint is, no one cares about me. No one cares about how I feel. I'm exhausted. At the end of the day, no one's really checking on me. No one's really taking care of me. But that is a consequence of a dance we created, to your point, right? And it's the same with me, right? It used to be. But we would go on vacation with my brother and his kids and whatever. And who was the one that was cooking three times a day? Me. Who was the one that spent almost zero time at the beach? Me. You know, who found the Airbnb, paid for it, did all the math? Me, right? And the truth is that when I stopped dancing that way and started responding with my need, which was, no, I want a vacation. I want to rest. When I meet my need, I actually meet someone else's. That's the truth. Is that I actually get what I want and someone else gets the opportunity to get what they want. You just don't know it. You think that by being the rescuer, or I'm not saying you, Nikki, I'm saying us, right? All of us. We think that by being the rescuer, we're actually giving everyone else what they want, but we don't. We end up getting in our masculine and actually not giving a lot of people the opportunity to express what they want to express. Right. So even though it's uncomfortable at first to stop that dance, it actually gives people the opportunity to give their part. Right. Because if you don't make the reservation, guess what? Someone will figure it out. Someone will end up making the reservation or someone else will have to cook. Right. But you're taking that all on as yours instead of allowing maybe your sister-in-law wanted to cook for everyone this amazing thing. And she's been resting for 6 days, so she doesn't mind cooking today. Right. Or maybe Rob had a specific, I'm sorry, I said your brother's name, but anyways, maybe your brother had a specific restaurant that he wanted to take everyone to, but you don't know because you don't allow that.
Well, Rob and I are both overfunctioning, so like I try to protect him because like I'm more aware than he is, and then it like will fall on him because he'll take it. Mm-hmm. So we do this dance with each other,
right?
But yeah, and I think I think it's so obvious that relationship, especially with like a woman and her husband, right? It's like, why is my husband a man child? Like, why doesn't my husband do like all these kind of things? And it's like, you know, Benny, you know, we've obviously had so many renditions of our relationship. And like the most recent was, in so many words, he's like, you know, you just kind of keep stealing my crown. Like, let me be king, you know, like why do you keep, like, it's like, I wanted to be like the sole ruling empress of like this kingdom.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is from growing up with a bunch of boys and just not being able to trust them and like not thinking, and also just like finding my differentiator. Like if not, I was going to be like the one that was weaker that they picked on and all these things. So like, at least I was like, well, I'm just going to be like the freaking queen here and be like the sole ruler. But then that of course ends up, you know, like a horrible scenario when you're actually like married to another, you know, to a man that then they fall like so behind, you know, because you've been, it's like saying if every day I carry all the bags and he doesn't wear carry any bags and we do the same amount of exercise every day, chances are I'm going to get stronger and he is going to look very weak. And when a man looks weak, they look unattractive.
Yeah.
And like, and they don't know a way out because they're in a relationship with you unless they go and they cheat and they have other relationships and find strength somewhere else. But like, guess what? Like you are holding up all this space in their life. The only place where they can actually grow and you're keep like taking from like this, you know, experience where they could grow and it's taking up such a big part of their life. So where else are they going to grow?
Right. And so this is something I see a lot is the masculine feminine flip, right? Something that you've experienced, something that I've experienced in my marriage too, where, and I see this more and more where women are very much in their masculine and men are in their feminine. And I know it's scary when you hear your daughter say, oh, I just want a man to take care of me. But the truth is that as the feminine, there is divine seasons where we actually do need to be taken care of. We actually do need to receive. So I know it's controversial, but the truth is, like from an evolutionary standpoint, men are built to survive. Their nervous system is built to survive and provide. That's what they're created to do. Our nervous system is built to survive and reproduce. And we know for a fact that if you're in survival, your reproduction will not work. So in order for you to be in reproductive states, to allow the hormones, to allow yourself to get pregnant, to allow all these things to flow in a healthy way, the survival part has to be outsourced to somebody else. It can't be done at the same time, which is why when women are overfunctioning, overstressed, overstimulated, their cortisol levels are through the roof, they have all these autoimmune issues, PCOS, hormone deficiencies. Like I see this over women that can't get pregnant, right? Like we see this over and over and over again. So there are seasons where I believe it is important for the woman to be in her divine feminine, which is not weak, but it is seen in our culture, which we live in this very like produce, produce, produce culture as a weakness. But like everything, there are seasons to it. And men want to be in their masculine. We see this over and over and over again. They actually want to be in their masculine. So you can't have two masculines or two feminines in a household. I see this even just heteronormative couples and not, right? Like there's always like kind of like a divine masculine feminine at work. So it's just us, again, in different seasons of our femininity as we float through different iterations of ourselves, when we can allow more receiving. Right? When we can allow more of that feminine from a place of strength. It's actually a very strong place when you're in your deep feminine and being able to receive. It's like a like Mother Earth, you know. Mother Earth is always like she's not loud, she's not like on top, it's she's just receiving, right? And she's giving in a very natural way, right? The way the earth gives is so effortless, let's say. Well, and that's what we're meant to be, you know?
The giving of the feminine is very easy to understand when you think about the fruit, right? It's right. Like, I am well nourished, therefore I bear fruit. Please have all my fruit. I'm not going to eat my own apples. Like, take the apple, right?
And
like,
it's effortless, right?
Whether that's like, I wrote this book because there was just so much coming out of me, or I made these things, there's just so much coming out of me and I'm well nourished. So, like, please take it.
For sure.
Judy, what if, I'm married, I'm 10 years deep and, or whatever, 7 years deep, let's say. And I've accidentally found myself in that position where, whether it was me or it was just like the luck of the draw, this guy is not producing. Like, how realistic is that? And maybe it's not always like a money thing, because like maybe there are women that just like are going to make more money. But I don't know. What do you do with couples there? And obviously you can't necessarily like go and change the man, but you can change your own behavior. I think one of the things you had told me, it was really just Benny was getting, you know, Benny took a solid like 3 to 4 years of not working he needed to after. And it was great for me because it was like exactly what I wanted to do was like grow my business. Mm-hmm. And then we've kind of been in this place where it's like, you know, it's gotten even. And then now it's might be flipping and I'm really scared about that. Mm-hmm. But he I remember just talking out, like the fear of seeing him go back into work, the fear of seeing him. He was so stressed when the money pressure was all on him, and I didn't do a good job of like holding space for like that stress. I was just like, what can I do to fix it? Like, let me just make enough money so I don't have to like see this stress that's
Right.
coming out of him.
Yeah.
And yeah, like that's kind of the story of how things happen. So I started to get scared, and you were very much like just reminding me to like let him, and it's okay if he like messes up again, because a lot of my story too is that this person like has deceived me and he lied to me, and like I lost a lot of trust in him because of what we went through. So to like gain trust again is like really scary, which I think women have lost trust in men for many generations. So it's like I'm sure that I'm not the first one to like not trust a man in my family, like that we know. But yeah, is there anything a woman can do to like maybe transform that habit that you might be in with your partner?
I think it's about having honest conversations, number one, right? Honest conversations, because when you get down to it, you will find, like most of the couples that we work with, you will find that he's upset that he's not more in his masculine, right? And then on the other end, maybe you can't transform his work or the amount of money he's making, etc., but you can do less and receive more in other areas. Right? Because these are the same women that, yeah, you're the main breadwinner, but you're also cooking dinner and you're also doing all the stuff for the PTA and you're also doing all the like buying of the school supplies. You're also doing all the other things. So it's where can you do less and him pick up more, right? There's lots of studies out there that say that when women make more money than men, men pick up more of the housework. Right? There's lots of studies out there. And so I know that as Latin women, where that's tough for us. We end up always taking like, right? We're like, no, I'm the woman. I gotta cook. So we unconsciously we just take on more, you know? And so it's about understanding where you and him to work together can work together, where he can continue to feel like the masculine, even though you're making more money. You know, like where can you do less? Where can you guys like share a little bit where you're like, because you're exhausted and you can't rest. That's the main thing that I hear from these women. They're exhausted and yet they can't rest. Because they feel guilty, because they feel bad, because they feel scared to rest, right? They feel scared in the receiving in general, right?
And that's why like the resting is usually sometimes like the first thing, because you can't you can't like change the other person. Like you have to do what you can within yourself. So like being when I got to a place of like it is safe to rest, like so much started to shift. And these are like little meditations that I can do, like no big deal, no biggie. Like I can make 20 minutes here and there to
Right?
rest, and that changes things. Those honest conversations are like a no, it's like duh, like such a no-brainer, but it's just so crazy how it doesn't happen. I remember Benny and I, I don't think he was, I mean obviously he was hiding so much, so for the first few years of our marriage, so there weren't as like what I thought they were honest, but they weren't, because there was a lot of hiding, and now they're like deeply honest, which is so funny when you get honest with your partner how much your sex life changes
Yeah,
too. So I
improves.
think that that's something interesting. Receiving checks like changes your sex life, and
Right.
being able to rest in an orgasm, like all that kind of stuff. Anyways, side note. But an interesting thing about like men women dynamics of like providing. So when Benny and I left, so Miami is like any other big city, New York City, LA. Like it is the gold medal Olympics of like providing, because to be able, it's not just like surviving. It's like I have to have a car, and my kid has to go to the private school, and I have to live in the neighborhood, and I have to, I mean, it is, it's hardcore.
It is.
Every time I think about when I go back, I was like, I cannot believe like we were trying to compete in these like the gold medal Olympics of providing, like whatever status basically. So Benny and I were talking about, I was talking to one with a woman friend of mine who is married to one of Benny's friends, and we have become friends, and we were talking on the phone, and she was complaining about her husband, that like that she has to find a way to like make more money, because like he's an attorney and he doesn't want to do any more. And she's like, I don't understand, he's an attorney, he could make more money. But the husband had a very strong line of like, no, like this is like the line. And I was talking to Benny about it, and I was like, can you believe it? It's so stupid. He just needs to take on more clients. He just needs to scale his business. Like, I was like, the masculine Nikki can tell you exactly how it's done. And he looked at me and he's like, Nikki, maybe like this style of life is enough for him. Like, there is a line. Maybe the kids don't need a BMW. Maybe the kids don't need a car, period, until they're ready to buy their car. Maybe the kids don't have to go to that private school. And I think that that is something sometimes like that women were just like, oh, my husband's not providing. But I also, as a, one of all these boys around me and seeing my dad really be a workhorse, I think I also try to protect the masculine sometimes because I think they deserve to have their lines. I think at some point I have to like respect what is enough for Benny. And if I'm like still hungry for some sort of lifestyle, I'm not sure how much he is meant to provide that for me. And I think that that's like a conversation sometimes of like, let's be honest about like what is enough for you and then like what is enough for the other person. And sometimes like another person's like the honest truth is like I'm okay with our kids going to this public school. You're the one who is not okay. And what do we do about that gap? And I find that to be an like that's he you know it's an interesting conversation to I and I think I have I think I definitely inspire Benny to have like a greater lifestyle than he would. And he's okay with that and he likes it and I think we're at a good place. But I also like when he brought that when we got to talk about somebody else's situation, it wasn't our situation. I thought it was so interesting that that's like also what the man is dealing with.
And
Like
I think
expectations and what is that line, you know?
in the world of manifestation, it's funny, that all the different ones that I've studied and looked at, it really comes to like it comes easily to you when it's coming from a true heartfelt need versus an ego need, right? Like ego would be like, I want $1 million, but why do you want that $1 million? Because the ego's like, well, if I have $1 million, then I can buy the Mercedes and people will look at me and know that I'm worthy. That's ego. Versus someone that's like, I want $1 million because I want to feel the safety and security of knowing that I can go on vacation with my child and feel connected and have memories and feel connected to God and source. And so that is a very like heartfelt intention, right? Onto like why to manifest things. So when couples are talking about that, it's about coming to that heartfelt goal. Like it's a great opportunity for couples to talk about like the goal of the family, the goal of the marriage. What is your manifestation together? Like, what are you guys working towards? What are you guys doing here spiritually? Like, what do you want spiritually for the family? And so then you start those conversations really start to get to the nitty-gritty of is the woman looking for things from an ego place because she's keeping up with the Joneses and she doesn't want the kids to be left out at school, right? Versus he's just like, hey, I just want like peace and connection. Or maybe he doesn't actually want the egoic things and that's bothering him. So he's standing firm because he's trying to make a point, right? And so there's a deeper conversation there about values, about your family's values, about the goals that you want, about what you see in the future. That's also a neuroplasticity tactic, right? The visualization of what you want in the future. It's like soccer players, right? Now that FIFA's going on, like it's soccer players, they visualize making the goal. They don't visualize not making the goal, they visualize making the goal. So what is your goal visualization? What are you guys working towards together? And so when you have that a little bit more like clear, it makes all these decisions easier.
And I think that kind of like wrap not wraps up, but like ties a little bow with the manifestation conversation because first it's like this intention that comes from a heart place, but it often comes from an ego place. And I just think like, yeah, without resting and without just coming down to a neutral to a zero, it's hard to even know where you're creating from because you can create definitely from ego, from the negatives. And I think that's what's so hard because a lot of people online, you're like, oh my God, I want to have what that person has online. But that person can be creating from like what I say from like a ladder from 0 to 10. Everything's zero below, like every zero is a neutral, and then there's these negatives, -1, -2, -3, like below. All those negative numbers are still creation power. They're from fear, from scarcity, from, you know, from those parts of ourselves. And they create. And the thing is, an over functioning person like myself, like as others in recovery, like you can create a lot from there, but then you get burnt out, you get exhausted, and that's the scary part. Like when the repro like that, which is what happened to me. They, you know, my brain was like reprogramming. We were letting go a lot of stuff, and now I was like, wait a second, if I can't create from fear anymore, or from scarcity, or from like what I'm afraid of, what do I even want? Number one, and number two, like, yeah, how do I do it without, because I'm no longer like a match to burn out, work hard, blah, blah, blah. So like, yeah, that's the scary part. So I would say like, if we're looking at that zero of that ladder, right? So we know that we've let go of the negatives because those are the things we've been talking about, like all that, because we've decided to, you know, rewired our minds to rest a little bit. We're at a zero. But maybe I still want some of the things that I wanted below. I just don't. I don't want them from a scarcity place anymore. Yeah, I guess how, like, what do you think? Like, how do you do that? How do I find the non-scarcity way to want what I want?
So I believe when you're doing things from fear and scarcity, to your point, you can produce a lot, but it ends up not being enough ever.
Okay.
Right? And so when you're trying to produce from a non-scarcity place, it's coming from that spiritual heartfelt intention, kind of like that Tsongkhapa that I said, right? So like a big one for me is just like the safety and security, right? I want to make money, not because I want to buy things so people can see that I have money and it makes me worthy. I want to be able to feel the safety and security of like all my bills being paid for, and my son, who's like, I want to experience Hawaii. I want to see what Hawaii looks like. I want us to be able to say, great, let's take a trip to Hawaii so you can experience volcanoes in this lifetime, right? So it's about getting connected to that. And then along the way, it's always enough. I don't know how else to
Can I
say
center
that.
that desire, like
Is
really
that
like connecting?
heartfelt desire? What is your real spirit doing here? What are you here to experience, right? And what is going to help you experience that in the most flow possible, right? Which is finding that sense of safety and security and peace. And so like when it's coming from that place, then like along the way, it's always enough. It's always great along the way. Instead of it being coming from like, it's not enough, it's not enough. It's like, oh, amazing. Now we get to do this. Now we get to experience this, right? And then the harvest comes and you're like, great. And then there's going to be other seasons because we know life is long and money comes and goes, right? And so in that flow, you'll always be in trust that like the low is there for the high and the high is there for the low, right? And so it's just teaching your children that, how to
And
flow with it.
to stay there. In Abraham Hicks, if you guys have ever experienced their work, you know, law of
Incredible.
attraction, that kind of stuff. One thing she always says, she's, you know, talks about like, you know, keeping the vibration heart highs, like staying from that heart place. And when you can't, you take a nap. She always says, and she's like she means it literally. She's like, and you go to sleep. And I think she has channeled the information very literal, but I really always understood like, and then
Rest.
you rest. You basically like rest, like you stop needing it, wanting it, having like must have it. Like you rest, and basically you exist in this space that like this moment is perfect. You let it go, and you allow yourself to receive it. So it is, it's like all connected.
Because the most magnetic energy on earth is authenticity. That's the most magnetic energy for people that like manifest quickly, and that authenticity comes from that trust and that connection with the divine. When you're completely connected with divine, you know that you are completely a child of God. You are full, whole as you are. You love yourself, all the shadows, all the dark, all the light, and you show up like that. Money wants to be with you. People want to be with you. Like everyone wants to be around you. It's a very safe energy. because that authentic energy to me, when it's truly authentic energy, it's very spiritually like divine and connected. You know, it feels peaceful. It's a very regulating energy in the nervous system. Right.
Okay. I was going to wrap it up, but I just have one more question about what makes a person inauthentic?
The insecurity, you know, when people are insecure, when people show up in ego, when people are doing things from the perception of, if I do this, people will see me as this, and that will make me better. So when there's inauthenticity, it's a lot of old programming where you've been shamed for something you did or didn't do, or something traumatic or distressing that happened to you, and it leads you to show up in performance, right? And overfunctioning is a way of being inauthentic. It definitely is. It's just it's very convenient for the people around you. So like, great. But it doesn't get you what you want. It doesn't get you what you want. That's the thing, is you think you're getting what you want, but then you're exhausted. And so then you never really fully appreciate everything you are trying to receive, or you're not actually allowing the receiving. So I believe in authenticity, it shows up before you in the room. You know, it shows up. And it's like when anyone's trying to sell something to you.
Yeah.
And it's coming from that salesy, like, place. But you can taste it. You might not be able to say what it is, but you can taste when someone is trying to sell you something and it feels like a sale. It doesn't feel like they're just trying to connect from an authentic place. You know what I mean? I hope that answers it.
Yeah, no, of course. And then, and I think authentic is just basically, what do you always say? Like, we heal to get closer to God, to get closer to the divine. Yes. And that authenticity is the true self, which is the divine within you.
Yeah.
Basically what today's conversation is. So, Judy, is there anything missing that I didn't ask you about, or anything that you wanted to share? Or do you
nothing. Just like, if you guys, you know, I want everyone to experience the Yoga Nidra that I wrote specifically for the Clarity members. But if you want to try more, I have a couple of free offerings on my website, which is judypassos.com. And then I have a couple of like packages and stuff for my overfunctioning women, and for my underfunctioning young women. I did one for like girls that are in college or like just getting in their workforce.
Wait a second. What is underfunctioning?
I'm sorry, my overfunctioning women that are in college.
I was like, wait, there are underfunctioning people? Tell me about these people.
Well, underfunctioning people are extremely depressed and aren't actually like showing up in life, right? But no, everything I do is for the overfunctioning women. I'm sorry, I meant to say my overfunctioning women, but my younger women, my women that are like in college or like just getting into the workforce. So those NSDRs are a little shorter. And also, I did want to mention, because I think, you know, people do get scared of the word yoga, and this meditation is a centuries old meditation that was written by yogis, but it is not a religious meditation by any like stretch of the imagination. It is very much a nervous system regulating meditation that is there to like help rewire the nervous system, which is why the other term is NSDR, which is non-sleep deep rest meditation. So I really want people to know that are religious, that are Christian, that are Catholic, that this is not trying to pull you away from your religion in any way, that this is not trying to like put any sort of like Buddhism or Hinduism into it, that the languaging that I use is very spiritual, but it's completely non-religious, and just really trying to get you connected to the God of your understanding, whatever that is, right? And so I want people to really rest in that it's not like a yoga religious specific, that is very much just like a spiritual meditation that does have a lot of scientific backing and evidence, which is the NSDR term for it.
I personally think it's the laziest way to regulate your nervous system. Like, I have, you know, obviously I've tried all the nervous system stuff, because like I'm a little guinea pig and I'll do all the things, and there's somatic exercises and there's breath work, and there's so many, and not to say that I don't use those things, like when I need them I will play around with it, but I was like, this is the laziest way possible. This is fantastic. I just have to sit here, and sometimes I fall asleep, and I think that that's still even okay.
Like, it's fine, especially in the beginning when I started doing it, because I had a deep, deep insomnia when I first started perimenopause. So to fall asleep in the beginning is no problem. Like, that's part of the process. And then eventually, you know, you do work up to being able to feel like you're sleeping, but have slight awareness the whole time. Yeah. But yeah, falling asleep is totally fine.
So yeah, we'll link all of that, guys, in the show notes. Yeah.
And all you have to do is lay down and listen, to your point. It's just lay down and listen.
Yeah.
And for my over-functioning women, that's exactly what you need. I know you don't think it is, but it is.
And then just watch your Oura Ring hit restore. That was like
the best.
My favorite was like, I come to Judy to like do all these things, and then I get really obsessed with my Oura Ring. I was like, Judy, you don't understand. I'm not restoring. And like...
And I'm like, take it off.
She's like, please take off. She's like, so wait, you've turned like rest and restoring into another thing you're like supposed to be amazing at? I was like, yes, actually, that is
another way to overfunction.
What's happening?
Me too. I have to take it off too, Dory.
But I'm like a restorative queen right now. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Good. Well, anyway, thank you so much. No, thank you. This was awesome. Like always.
Thank you for being here. Thanks, everybody, guys. And I can't wait to hear about all your resting.
Thank you, everyone.